We're here today with the stated topic is the summer issues, Slurpees, sodas, coffees, hotels. You can join us on the link that was sent to you by email. It's on Click Webinar. That's how we're hosting it now. If you have a problem with your computer, you can join us by phone. 218-895-1203. Again, 218-895-1203. And the passcode is 2020 pound. So I thought we would start with an update on our strawberry policy. The summery fruit.
Right.
Although nowadays you can get it almost any time of
year. That's true.
But the strawberries have, for those that have been following our sessions, they have a little worm on them, very tiny, and it's best seen when it's alive and moving. Otherwise,
right.
It's very hard to tell.
Smaller than the seeds
on the strawberry. But and many times they hide under the seeds or under the leaf, especially the top green. And our process has been to clean that from the little insects, which most people don't even realize are there, is to soak it in soapy water and then rinse it under a strong stream of water. Our guidelines are on the web at checkforinsects.com. You can find our guidelines there. And that website was put together by Reb Zev Steen, did a very good job, who's also our producer today. So thank you very much, Zev. But our policy on frozen strawberries was
that any frozen strawberries with nothing added.
Any frozen strawberries with nothing added
would be okay.
Would be okay, not from the land of Israel, because then you have separate issues. Would be okay. The thinking was that the washing process and the freezing process would be enough to remove the insects from there, and we've done some more testing, and we're not sure what changed. Maybe the bugs are more prevalent nowadays, or whatever it is. But we're changing that policy, and now we're recommending that you do buy it with a reliable certification. Buy frozen strawberries with a reliable certification. So that change is going to be reflected on checkforinsects.com probably in the next day, and we just updated this policy. So we wanted to share that with you.
Is that just strawberries, or was that?
That's just the only.
So far, it's only been
that's
strawberries.
Only the strawberries that we were lenient with, and now we're being stricter with that. So, hopefully, it's not that hard to find for people.
Okay. What we're lenient with, something like blueberries.
Blueberries don't have
a worm issue.
Don't really have an issue at all. Fresh or frozen,
right.
Unless you see if they're fresh, you might see that they have something. They're going rotten, and they have spots on them or white.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the white covering. That's just the sugar on the blueberry. They have like a little
natural sugar.
Natural sugar, right? It's not sugar, but they have a natural sugar that comes out like grapes do. But not that. We're talking about some.
We don't eat those strawberries. We don't eat blueberries.
Some serious degradation of the fruit that could lead to some.
You get that in the day old cheapy ones, right?
Well, even in the fresh ones you could get.
Okay.
Sometimes. Can you just slice off the top? Shalom is asking about the strawberries. Slicing off the top takes care of the ones that are on the top, but it doesn't take care of the little worms that are on the side or under the seeds even, and for that we need washing in soap. Jonathan says, what about the mites that are found in the strawberries that even washing does not help? Well, that's our policy is that the washing does help that, and that's the policy of the major agencies in the United States.
Are the mites different than the
I think we're talking about the same thing. The mite is the worm. There's only one strawberry. What's it called, Dev, again? There's a technical name for it.
Bugus strawberryus.
There is some name for those little. But we have a little video also on our site. I wonder if I can show that to you. It would take me a little fiddling right now. I think I could show it to you.
That would be neat.
Do you want me to try? Okay, one second. Let me try that. So in order to show you what that little strawberry looks like, I have to do this. Hold on 1 second. Just bear with me. I don't think the people listening by telephone will be able to see this, but they can look at it afterwards if they have
special
access
technology
to the internet. We're going to go over here to our Check for Insects site. We're going to look under strawberries. And okay, and there is a video over here. But in order for you to see it, I know, 1 second, I'm going to share my desktop with you. Do you see it, Zev? Do you see my desktop? Okay, I'm sharing my screen now. So we're going to go over here. You should be able to see this little... Can you see that? Okay, so here's the video. And I don't know if you can see it well enough. That little arrow there is pointing to the little white... Okay, we're focusing in there.
There he is.
That's the little strawberry worm. Can you see that, Zev? Okay, you can see him. I think there you can see him very well. It's very small. Next to the seed, you see it's about a little, much smaller than the seed there.
So the soap actually...
Is it coming up there?
There he is.
Okay, so what you do when you soap it is that it makes it that they can't...
Slippery,
and they can't grip. We recommend the...
dish soap.
Dish soap, yeah, like Dawn or something like that.
I mean, they make other... You can get something like, what do you say it was called? Tsunami or...
Bison. Okay, Zev is going to take you through the washing. Okay, but you can take a look at that at a later time. See, it becomes soapy, and then that gets off the bug.
And the soap washes off very nicely, so that it doesn't affect the taste of the strawberry
absolutely.
Afterwards.
When going strawberry picking in Maryland, are the bugs...
The same as when you buy in the store.
The same as when you buy in the store. I would think so. Okay, let's move on to coffee, Rabbi Bayer. There's been some updates with coffee as well.
Right.
That you want to give us a brief synopsis
of
that? Yeah.
Yeah. We have for the longest time been recommending that you could purchase coffee anywhere, in any place that sells coffee, and including...
Meaning black
unflavored
coffee.
If you're not careful about Chol of Yisrael, then you can even have the milk there. The sugar is, of course, okay. And that included Starbucks. And many of you might be familiar. Recently, the Chicago Rabbinical Council came out with a whole expose on Starbucks. And they did a lot of research on it. And we also researched it here locally. And we found that a lot of what was being said, it was true. And therefore, we've changed our policy regarding Starbucks. And at this point, we are, if you're dealing with us with a full-service Starbucks, and that's the kind of a Starbucks that also serves non-kosher meat sandwiches. They have a bacon sandwich, and they have a turkey sandwich. So at this point, we're recommending that you do not purchase coffee in those Starbucks because we have found that they wash the coffee making equipment together with the plates and what have you that's used for these non-kosher meat sandwiches. So the brewed coffee, that would mean the regular brewed coffee that you would get in the Starbucks, we're not recommending if you're getting it at a full service Starbucks.
What are the caveats to that? If you're going
right.
to a
so
kiosk.
If you go to a smaller setup where, like a kiosk type of thing, maybe in an airport possibly, where they're not serving these non-kosher sandwiches, and you can see if they are or not, you can ask them. So then we're saying that the brewed coffee will be fine.
And the flavor, it has a
right.
symbol,
a the flavors are
has
okay.
a K on it, right?
In Starbucks, they...
It
actually has an OU on it.
It has an OU on it? Okay.
Yeah, most of the flavor syrups that they use at the Starbucks are certified.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, while we're on the Starbucks topic, you know, people should just be aware that there are many drinks that are offered in Starbucks that, for some reason, for years, people have been making assumptions that they're fine, and in reality, they're not. For example, a Frappuccino. It's not made with a certified... It's made with a mix. It's not made with a certified mix. No one's really checked it out. why people, you know, continue to buy it, I don't know, but it's really not something mm-hmm. that you should be buying unless you really know what's going on. And that's, you know, that's
the story.
We do
have another leniency that Rabbi Heinemann
correct.
Is saying that if you're on the road and you're away from home, based on a certain halachic principle in Jewish law, that being away from home creates a certain b'dievid, a certain need, and
right.
we can be more lenient. You're not exactly able to work out things the way that you would like to, and
right.
And therefore, in such a case, it would be permitted to drink
coffee.
That coffee, because the issue is not a major one that is
right.
totally forbidden. It's not like you're eating the actual non-kosher.
Right.
There is some soap and the washing and this.
Right. There are definitely ways around this problem, but you know, if you're local and you have a choice not to drink it, then you should not do it.
Right, so we're going to have, you wrote the article for our Kashrus Current, that's going
right.
to be coming out in July.
Right.
That's our
quarterly. That what they said?
Mm-hmm. Our quarterly publication.
Okay.
And mm-hmm. that will be coming out, and you'll have all your information over there,
right.
and then it will also be on our website. But we want to give you the heads up right now.
If you're traveling.
Now there's all detailed questions about details.
The Starbucks.
Anything in the latte?
Okay, so let me just comment. The espressos, which is like a smaller, concentrated type of a coffee drink that's made in Starbucks and many coffee stores now. Espressos in Starbucks, at least the equipment that's used to make those are not washed generally with the non-kosher equipment. There's a separate washing system for that, and therefore the espresso drinks, we're still recommending those.
Okay, and there's all sorts of particular questions over here. What about Dunkin' Donuts? That's a major question. That you went into the Dunkin' Donuts over here, right? Well, Dunkin' Donuts here are certified.
Our Dunkin' Donuts is certified by
the
Starbucks.
So that's not a problem. But the Dunkin' Donuts, you went into the 7-Eleven.
We went into 7-Eleven locally, right. And also there's a local
Royal Farms?
Royal Farms, right, a local kind of a similar 7-Eleven type store. And we found that in the 7-Eleven and this other Royal Farms that there was not an issue with the mixing of equipment while they were washing, so we thought it was fine.
Mm-hmm. Actually, this system that we're using actually shows us where the people, just as an aside,
mm-hmm.
where everybody is
just from.
Is from.
Oh, really?
It doesn't,
okay.
it tells us, because I guess based on the on the, you know, the way they're logging in or something like that, and we do have it says we have some from Australia today. We have some people
okay,
from
so
we want to give a special
shout out to the how did I say it in Australia?
Really, I don't know. I've never been there.
Something with Nate.
From all over the world, really, people are joining us, and that's really great. Hopefully, we're doing a service to people who, you know, wouldn't necessarily have this opportunity otherwise.
Right. Don't know what the coffee situation is in Australia.
Yeah, we're not familiar with these. Is there Starbucks in Australia?
I don't know.
Okay.
I would assume that there is, but I don't know.
So, you know, with your local Dunkin' Donuts kind of place, we don't have...
Yeah, it's hard to say.
It is hard to say. Yeah, if they're not washing the dishes
I'll tell you
together,
one, right.
okay.
One way to maybe tell, in 7-Eleven, for example, at least the local 7-Eleven that we checked, the system that they have now is they have separate... urns for each type of coffee, and those urns sit on the counter separate from everything else, and those urns are never removed back to.
Do they wash them?
And they wash them, but they wash them in place.
How do they do that?
There's a little chemical that they add, and it gets cleaned in place, so it never goes back to where the other thing is washed. So if you have a 7-Eleven like that set up, then I would assume we'll be okay. It's only from Melbourne.
John, okay, John, okay, okay, welcome. Okay, and there, what time is it in Australia now? It must be late at night.
Late at night, or early in the morning, one or the other.
Okay, we have a question. If the issue is they're washing the coffee equipment with the non-kosher sandwich equipment, why isn't it an issue for washing the coffee equipment with non-kosher flavor equipment, meaning somebody had, Well, the flavor equipment is you put it into the disposable cup. Anyway,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
The flavor you put. I have to admit that I've never been in a Starbucks. But the way I understand it, they put the flavor into each cup, so that gets thrown out. But besides that, the flavors themselves, even if they were not
kosher certified, it'd be rare to find a flavor that would be
it's something that you wouldn't want to drink, but it's not something that would cause a problem.
Right. Not the same thing as bacon.
Right. It's not the same thing as bacon. Here on that note, we have an emailed question, and of course, you can always email us questions back when you get when before the show, and that's a good way to let us know that you have something to ask. This is a question, I believe, from New York, of all places. Okay.
There's a couple of Jews there.
Is there any issue with Slurpees and sodas, like the recent development of coffee? They want to not buy it in a retail store, since they cook food on site, since they may wash the Slurpee equipment with non-kosher equipment.
No.
True, Slurpees and sodas are cold, but if they're washed together in hot water, is there any reason to refrain from purchasing them as well? So let's talk a little bit about the Slurpees. They don't...
Just to answer that question directly, I don't believe they wash
right.
the Slurpee machines. I mean, I don't know if they never wash the Slurpee machines, but...
And even if they wash them, they don't... The Slurpee machines are in place,
right? I don't think they take them back anywhere.
They would have to bring a hose or something and wash it right there. If they do wash
it
at all,
maybe a little bit. I don't know. We've never heard that issue.
And I don't think that's a problem at all. But let's talk a little bit about those Slurpees. This is our summer. Our summer. How many Slurpees do they sell over the summer, Rabbi Bayer? You know that.
No.
There is some. Remember, a few years ago we talked about this on the
several
air.
Several Olympic pool sizes,
right.
I think.
Right. A lot of Slurpees
out there. The summer get consumed.
What about the nozzles on the machine? I guess he's asking, do they wash those? I don't think that they wash those either. Why they
don't wash the nozzles. The only issue we've
they
had.
They might clean them with a rag or something. What?
Yeah, that's possible. It's possible.
The issue really with the Slurpees is the flavors. Are you getting what you would like to get? You know, you would like to get a Coca-Cola or whatever other kosher flavor is there.
Right. Are you going to end up getting a non-kosher flavor?
Is that what you're getting? Or are you getting perhaps a mixture? Because what they do is when they run out and they want to change the flavor, so they will... attach the new flavor, the bag,
right.
And you'll be getting the end of one flavor and the beginning of a new flavor a little bit mixed in until the machine cleans itself out.
Right.
That is a little bit of a concern. We've gone through that.
Right.
It is a little bit of a concern, and that's why we can't, sitting over here, take responsibility for all the 7-Elevens across the country, what exactly they're doing. However, the concerns are minimal. Usually, it is the flavor that they advertise, and
right.
even if it wouldn't be again, flavor concerns are not the greatest issue, and it's not that much of a deal. But you have to make that decision.
Right, and it's important to remember that the overwhelming majority of Slurpee flavors are kosher certified. There's just a handful that aren't. So,
I mean, would it be better to go into a kosher certified store? Like there are
yeah,
a few, if
I mean,
you have that.
If you have that, if you have that luxury. But I don't think you have to hold back buying a Slurpee based on that concern.
One of the rabbis here, his refrain is that he feels that the Coca-Cola, that you can always get. Because yeah. they always have to have Coke, and there's no reason
right.
really for them to change that.
Right.
While the other flavors, it depends on whatever the kids are interested in now, or whatever they get
yeah.
a better deal on.
For example,
Coca-Cola is always going to be Coca-Cola.
There's a new flavor available this summer called Summertime Lime, which is kosher. There's another one, Icebreaker Blueberry, which is kosher.
Okay, one of the listeners is asking for a... For a Slurpee list, I'm going to bring that up just to show you what we have on our site.
Yeah. So the latest and greatest Slurpee list will come out.
Here it is. One second.
In the conscious currents.
Yeah. I'm going to just change around things here for a second, and this allows me to show you this list. So here it is, and here we can see on top of that list we have an old webinar that
yeah.
we did on the Slurpee. So you can read all about the issues over there, or hear about them. And then this is on our website. I think if you actually go to the homepage, which is star-k.org, there is a button there for the Slurpees. Yeah, we put it. I told them to put it up because it's a timely issue. And here you can see the following 7-Eleven Slurpee flavor syrups are kosher parv unless otherwise stated that it might be dairy. And you have all of the, I think there's enough here to satisfy even the pickiest child or adult. and at the, okay, there is an addendum here about ices. Also, there are some ices that are kosher. And again, the heading over here shows you that we are not taking responsibility that every flavor, is exactly, we're not certifying the individual 7-Eleven location. So you have to use your own discretion. And that's our Slurpee list. And we also have a soda list.
Next one up.
Beverages, right?
Yes.
Beverages. Here's the recommended soft drink list. And tells you all the kosher sodas, whether or not it needs a certification on it. Many don't.
Right. Even the one, well.
They're certified without a symbol on it. That is another whole story.
Yeah, Coca-Cola in the United States is fine with or without the.
You're talking about any Coca-Cola product?
I'm talking about Coke.
Coca-Cola.
You can buy any Coke anywhere in the U.S.
All right. Okay, let's go back to this format. Okay. Is natural flavor still a red flag? Shalom is asking. Does that mean natural flavor is in a?
In anything.
It could be a red flag, yes. But if it's certified kosher, then it's then obviously the certification agency has taken care of that.
Hopefully.
Hopefully has taken care of that issue. Okay, I wanted to speak a little bit about the hotels. I think that was one of the topics. I want to get to that in case somebody tuned in for that. Actually, let me go back to our...
We have a hotel list?
We don't have a recommended hotel list, no.
I'm not saying we can charge for that. I wanted to advertise.
I'm just going
to
change the screen around here a second, if you bear with me again. Here is, if you look on our website and you go to the box and you type in hotels, it'll bring you up this article that I wrote a couple of years ago about your halachic guide to hotels. What do you have to keep in mind when you go to a hotel, various issues. So let's talk about some of them. What about coffee at the hotel, Rabbi Weizen?
What about coffee at the hotel? That's a good question.
Coffee at the hotel.
Well, I was thinking about that.
So if you're in a hotel, usually you'd be traveling.
There's two questions with coffee in a hotel.
Okay.
Because most hotels, number one, will give you a coffee maker in your room.
Right, the coffee maker in the room,
and they'll also have coffee at breakfast or sometimes all day long. Available in the lobby of the hotel.
Right. So I'm just going to scroll down here. You can see we have all different types of issues that we discuss. Let me just get out of that and go back to the other chatting box so people can talk to us here. So you're saying that the coffee downstairs
should fall under
the traveling leniency,
correct?
Right. The coffee in the room. What we've said is that it depends what the coffee maker. How the coffee maker is functioning.
What's made out of, right.
If it has a carafe that you're sticking under, and the question is not, do they wash it with non-kosher dishes? Because it's unlikely that they would take it downstairs. Usually they would just...
They rinse it in the sink to clean it.
Right. When you go to hotels, you don't see that they're piles of coffee containers taking downstairs to the dishwasher. But the problem is when people stay in hotels, sometimes they sort of make do and they use the carafe to heat up
as a cooking device to heat up
whatever they bring.
And we said also it depended on what the carafe was made out of, right? Isn't that what we pointed out in the article? Usually glass.
No.
We said there's some plastic ones nowadays.
No, that's not. The distinction is some of them don't have a carafe anymore. The more upscale, I think, are having...
It's all one piece.
It's just one cup. They give you a throwaway cup, and you put it down. You put the coffee bag in, and you put the cup in. You make your hot water, and that's it. So in that case, there is no way that it could be used
for anything else.
So then, in that case, it's not a problem to use the hot water in the cup. You make hot water in the cup, and you add your oatmeal or whatever you want to add to it. But again, if you have a carafe, the problem is that people
could heat up their non-kosher soup in it, or
right? Maybe they heat up non-kosher soup now,
or whatever.
The concern is not the greatest
again,
concern.
It's not the greatest, right?
Most people who go to hotels, unless they're Orthodox Jews, are not bringing food to heat up in their
right.
in their carafes. They go down to the restaurant, or they order out pizza, or they did something. It's
well, maybe Muslims might. We don't know.
They might. Okay, there are people, but there definitely are people that do that.
But the majority don't.
There are people I've read about it. It is not the common, but it does happen. And therefore, we recommend not to use the carafe
right.
for heating up hot water that you would want to use for anything. So that is a little bit of an issue. Let's talk about the refrigerator. Sometimes hotels have refrigerators in the room.
As far as the light, you mean?
As far as the light on Shabbos, you should turn off the light before. But as far as kosher wise. It should just be clean, and usually it would be clean, hopefully,
right.
and that's not an issue to use.
Plus, it's full of all those expensive, you know, snacks and things, which is not a problem.
Don't
buy them unless they have a hefter.
The issue would be, yeah, the food that's in there, you would want to make sure it's certified. The issue that I want to mention is the if you leave food in there, let's say you're staying a couple of days in a hotel. And you bring your meat and fish and wine,
that's a great point,
and
yeah.
you leave it in the refrigerator. Well,
the maid comes in.
The maid comes in. So, according to Jewish law, you're not supposed to leave the fish and meat and wine unguarded
or
unsupervised. So, therefore, you'd want to make sure that it is sealed properly sealed so that you can.
If I just kind of tied it and. Wrote my name on it.
There are ways to do it. It doesn't have to be a real. You don't have to have Starcade tape to do it, but you can do it. There are ways to do it, that's one issue you want to be careful about. Riv is asking, what about the steam from the non-kosher soup? Could that be an issue? Okay, if somebody. Okay, what's the case that she might be talking about? Let's say you have a cup. If you could clarify which case you're talking about. Whether you're talking about where there's a cup or where there's a carafe.
She's talking about using hot water from an urn?
Well, the carafe we're suggesting not to use, so she must be talking about when it goes into a cup.
When
it goes into a cup,
here.
You fill it up with hot water, and then you move it
right.
away from there in order to put your non-kosher soup in. So the steam is not going to go up to the machine.
Well, let's talk about the continental breakfast just for a second.
Yeah, one second. She says if they put the cup under with the tray of soup. Oh, I see. So let's say they put the non-kosher.
You get down at the breakfast and they have a place just for hot water.
No. Up in the room, you have a cup that you pour your soup mix in,
mm-hmm.
and then you put it under the hot water.
The steam will affect.
Okay, so. Okay, okay, that could be a problem. I see what you're saying now. The whole concern over here is minimal anyway. Most people don't do this. As long as you see that it's clean,
mm-hmm.
I don't think you have to be concerned.
Certainly
that someone did this. It's Ana Ben Yomo.
It's been used in 24 hours.
Right.
So.
I would not be concerned about that because, again, how many people really come in and put non-kosher soup into the thing to make it? It would be one in a thousand. So it's not something that the halacha would be concerned about. What if the wine is mevushel, is cooked wine, Yehuda says? Is that a concern? No. If the wine is cooked, and then you're allowed to leave it unexposed. He's going back to the refrigerator.
Oh.
We're going back to the refrigerator.
Oh, it's Shabbos.
Okay.
You have wine for Shabbos.
Going back and forth.
Like, yeah, okay.
Different questions.
Okay. Someone had the key question. That's the
electric
no
doors. electric doors locks on Shabbos. Okay, that's a major issue now. Most of the hotels don't use the old fashioned key, but they use an electric swipe card.
Right.
And some of them are even going further than that. When I did my research, I don't stay in such fancy hotels, but some of them. You can get onto your phone.
I've seen your expense account, Rabbi Goldberg.
You have? You get onto your phone a barcode.
Yeah.
in other words, they email you a barcode, and then when you get to the hotel, you don't go to the desk. You go straight to your room. Yeah. They tell you which room you're in. You go straight to your room. There's a barcode reader there. You put your phone up to the scanner, and it opens up and it lets you in.
Really?
Yeah. Obviously, this kind of system is not acceptable for Shabbos. But what about the keys? The
so what do you do on Shabbos, right?
So we've discussed that. Rabbi Heinemann is of the opinion. Rabbi Heinemann is our administrator. He's of the opinion that you can leave the key at the desk and have the non-Jewish staff, when you want to go back to your room, you say, you know, I want to go to sleep. I need my room open. So they come up with you, they open the door, and they take the key back down with them. And then the same thing, you can do that a couple of times throughout Shabbos. Again, I wouldn't want to bother them too many times.
You better speak to them before Shabbos.
You better speak to them before Shabbos, right. Absolutely, you should make sure. And even better is that you should call them in advance of making your reservation, right, and say, I have this and this problem, and are you familiar with these issues? And you can see in my article,
and they'll say,
different issues.
Oh, sorry, we have no vacancies.
Most likely they want to work with you. Most of the hotels are willing to work with you. If you do it in a nice way and you explain it to them, most of the hotels would be willing to work with you. One of the problems I mentioned there is that if you set your lights before Shabbos on, off, whatever you want in the room, then you come in on...
You're saying with the timer?
No, you just said something. You want some on and some off.
Oh, okay.
And the housekeeping comes in the morning,
turns off all the lights,
and turns them all off, or turns on one that you didn't want on, and whatever, right, and then you can't change anything.
Right.
A solution to that is to put out the "Do Not Disturb" sign on your door. And my understanding is that many hotels take more seriously violation of that sign than they do stealing from the rooms, if the help steals from the rooms. In other words,
really,
if help would steal something, they would get reprimanded, maybe they would get fired, maybe they wouldn't. But if they go into a room that says "Do Not Disturb," then my understanding is that they take that very seriously, because they don't want people who put out a "Do Not Disturb" sign do not want to be disturbed.
Really?
So that should be able to solve that problem. Are there any questions that you have where we're more than happy to take any particular questions, or we'll just continue with the okay. David says, if you go to a suite hotel with a kitchen in the room, you can call in advance and have them put on the self clean for your coming to stay. Okay, you can have them put on the self clean. That's correct. The question would be, how would you know that the self-clean was put on when you come? I guess you see a clean oven. How would you verify that it was done? Not sure about that point. You would see a clean oven, but most likely you would see a clean oven anyway.
Right.
Most likely they're not going to leave it dirty for you.
Right.
Yossi asked, in a non-Mahadran hotel in Israel, what can I eat? Okay, that's
a loaded question.
Yeah, that's a difficult question to answer in this kind of form. So I recommend, if you have a question like that, please get in touch with us. I didn't give out our phone number.
Oh.
What is that? 410-484-4110. You're more than welcome to call us with questions or email us at star-k@star-k.org. Right, star-k@star-k.org. And just station identification, I'm Rabbi Zvi Goldberg, this is Rabbi Baruch Bayer to my right, and we're here at the Star K headquarters in Baltimore, Maryland. This webinar and teleconference is held once a month at the end of the month on Wednesday at noon. Next month, we're not going to have a webinar on that date. Look to your emails for an updated schedule, but it's not going to be due to some summer scheduling. We're not going to have it till last Wednesday. There we go. Zev put up our website or our email. That's our email. How about a hotel with electric eye toilets? Okay. Electric eye toilets are a problem for use on Shabbos, on Saturday. because they're electronically.
Well, you could cover the eye, I think, and then do it manually.
Some of them you can cover the eye and do it manually. Not some of them. The button, they all have a button,
right,
in case the eye malfunctions. But
right,
the button
is electric,
many times
also?
Is electric also. Uh-huh. It's hard to tell, but one key way of just starting to determine it is if you just have to give a little push,
then it's electric.
Then it's electric. If you have to,
absolutely,
if you're using pressure, you'd have to be pushing like you would if there were a handle there. You have to let the pressure.
So, in
down.
A worst case scenario, what is someone supposed
well,
to do?
Well, let's talk about the you know, preventing that problem. In to begin with, is finding out from the hotel what do they have in
right
in the.
So you really need a checklist.
You need to check. I would like to create one.
Yeah.
It's one of my to-do lists is to go through my article and create a checklist of what is
what you're looking for
at
the time you're making a.
Many hotels have in the public areas, like downstairs in the lobby, will have an electric eye, but in the rooms they will have a regular. But some will have even electric eye in the room, and that's a problem. You wouldn't want to stay in such a hotel.
Right. The same thing with electric eye with the
Water.
Well, the water,
the water
and also when you walk into the room or out of the room.
But when you walk into the room, they have the
lights go on.
Right, the air conditioning
goes on. The air conditioning, right.
They're trying to save energy. So the way they set it up is that when you come into the room, the air conditioning goes on to whatever setting you put it on. When you leave the room,
right,
the air conditioning goes off to save money.
There's sometimes an advantage if you go on one of these programs where they actually have a whole kosher hotel.
Right, they should be taking
hopefully
care of it.
Hopefully they're taking care of a lot of these things.
Not,
you still need to double check.
Not always. Sometimes the kosher is just taking care of the food.
Right.
But hopefully they'd be taking care of these things too. Someone, I read about a person who was in one of these hotel rooms and he was sleeping and not moving. So the air conditioner went off.
Okay.
And he said he had to wave his hand
to get it to go on.
Because he was hot, to get it to go back on.
Uh-huh.
So usually those can be disabled by the staff. I would not try that on my own, but ask the staff to disable it before the Shabbos starts. Can you ask the hotel staff to adjust the air conditioning settings if it's too cold or hot? That is a good, very good question.
If the same question you'd have at home. I mean,
it's the same question as you would have at home, correct. If it's too cold, then the answer is yes, because we're afraid that somebody might get ill if it's too cold. If it's too hot, then it really depends. How hot is it and who's in the room? And that's a more difficult question to answer. Is there a problem if the refrigerator is in the bathroom? Common with the very small ones. I've never seen that. Is there a problem that the food is then kept in the bathroom?
I've never seen that either.
But he must have come across it. He says it's common.
It would be a yeah. I mean, keeping food in the bathroom is not so.
That would be an issue. one of the you mentioned before about the bar in the refrigerator that you take the items out. So those are not free.
Really?
I know somebody who went to a hotel and they took 4 bottles of water and they got a bill for $38.
Really?
Yeah. It was like
good water. That's good water.
They didn't realize. So the question is taking. Can you take something out on Shabbos on Saturday, or is that called like you're buying it? The answer is that it's okay to take it out because
they don't register it somewhere.
What happens is that they come. The housekeeping will come whenever they come. They'll open the refrigerator and see what you took out. They'll mark it down then, and then they'll bill you for it. So you're not actually really transacting right now. There is a problem. Some of them are more advanced, and they do register. When you take out one, the others move into place,
uh-huh,
and it registers that you took one out. And at that point, some of them, they actually give you a chance to put it back, like 30 seconds if you decide you don't want it. But other than that, you're going to be buying it right then and causing it to electronically register.
Place.
Yeah, so that would be a problem. I've been in hotels where there are sensors under stuff in the fridge and you wouldn't know it. We were warned at the desk. Okay, really? So it's not so obvious. That's a very good point. I think I'll look into that and add that point to my article. That it's not like a vending machine where it's obvious that mm-hmm. you're going through one another another. Here, it's just under, and you wouldn't necessarily know that.
Right.
That's a very good point. Okay, thank you, Talia, for bringing that up. Let's see if there's anything else crucial over here. Otherwise, we're going to wind it down. Security cameras. This is very common.
Yeah.
Tissues. Security cameras. In the hotel.
What? Tissues could be. I was just joking, but tissues could be an issue. Make sure they're not.
They have to cut them before
Shabbos. Make sure everything. Just like you do at home.
Mm-hmm. That's basically the same at home.
Right.
And security cameras. There are probably security cameras in the hotel nowadays.
Not in the rooms, though, are they? No.
No, not in the rooms, but in the public areas. Our policy is that we recommend that you avoid being seen or videoed by them if it's possible. Not to walk in front of them. Uh-huh. If it's difficult to avoid, and it usually is, and you have no interest in being seen by the cameras,
you have to walk like you know.
Well, this won't help because uh-huh. then you're just photographing.
That's not what you mean.
to avoid being seen would mean
you don't want
to walk around a different way. Right.
Got it.
If you have no interest in being seen by the cameras, usually you don't. It's not for you. It's for their benefit. Then you're permitted to walk past them. This is a ruling that Rabbi Heinemann clarified with Rabbi Yashiv in Israel.
Asking an interesting question. Aren't there security cameras on Park Heights Avenue?
There are security cameras on Park Heights Avenue, and the same ruling goes over there. You have no interest in being seen by them. It's difficult to avoid where you have to walk by them. Mm-hmm. And but the question is really whether Park Heights Avenue, for those who are not from Baltimore, let's say the people in Australia, they probably don't know what Park Heights Avenue is.
The main Jewish street in Baltimore.
In Baltimore, like you might have Bathurst in Toronto
or 13th Avenue or Avenue J or something like that in New York.
Right. So there are security cameras. That flashlights. I wonder whether or not they're really working anymore.
I've also thought that. I didn't even think they worked when they first put them in. I just thought it was just.
We're not sure whether or not
for show.
Whether or not anyone's really watching. I think they set aside money to put them in, but they didn't set aside any money to run it. To monitor it. So I actually think that nobody is really. They're not really on.
Yeah.
But yes, the same issue would apply there theoretically.
Electronic doors.
Okay.
Yes, electronic
many
doors.
Shuls now have these cameras inside, shooting the entire inside of the shul. Okay, on Shabbos. So that's a problem. You can't avoid going to shul on Shabbos, and you're being photographed, videographed. That and since you have no interest in it, it's okay. It's permitted, especially since in the shul, most likely there is no screen that's on. In the shul, probably it's just being recorded somewhere.
On a hard drive, for later viewing
if there would be a problem. There's mm-hmm. probably not somebody, at least in the United States,
monitoring it all the time.
Maybe in Europe you might have that, but in the United States you're not having people watching all the time, and the video screen is probably even off, mm-hmm. most likely. So it's less of an issue because there's no video coming out right now. Don't know if it's possible, but how about creating a list of hotels that are safe or accommodate Jewish guests? People could submit them to you based on their experience. That's a good idea. There are still hotels that actually have the old style keys for people who don't want to use the cards. Have the non-Jew.
You know, that's actually a very good idea because you know you go on some. There's a website out there called Travel Advisor.
Okay.
I believe, and if you go on there, you pick a particular hotel, and then they'll have like reviews from people who've actually stayed there. At least you hope that they've actually stayed there and they just make it up. But if you have like a, you know, people can actually go on there and write reviews of this hotel.
Right.
That would be a really useful useful idea.
We can try to find a way to do that. There are some of the hotels still have the keys.
The old-fashioned keys.
Like if it's in a Orthodox Jewish area, like in LA there are some. And in New York, there are some.
Europe has it also.
They set aside a specific number of rooms that still have those keys for the Orthodox guests. Right. And so it is worthwhile to seek out such places if it's possible. Many times it's not possible, but it would be worthwhile to do that.
Asking about the electronic doors.
Okay, I think this will be our last question. What can we do if the hotel entrance has an automatic door? Is it possible to exit the hotel in such situations on Shabbos? Okay, I would assume all hotels have alternate entrances for power failures. Okay, so I do discuss this in the article at some length. You can take a look over there. But basically, you should try to find a different way out and in. Sometimes the staff exits and entrances, like through the kitchen, if they'll
allow you to do that
with prior arrangements.
Or you can wait for some. Where can't you?
You can go out those, right? Or
you wait for someone else to go through.
You can
and
wait
walk
for
out
a non-Jewish person to go out, and then you can
walk out.
Go out with him if it's already open. You're not considered to be doing anything.
Right.
I would not assume that every hotel has an alternate entrance for power failure. Sometimes the electronic door itself functions during a power failure just by pushing it. Sometimes it doesn't require to, you know,
right.
They know, they don't want to have all the guests
locked in
looking for an exit.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point.
So they can, you know, they do open sometimes even in a power failure. Okay. I see there's some more questions, but all good things have to come to an end at some point. I thank you. It's been a very lively discussion. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. And this session will be archived at kosherclasses.org, kosherclasses.org, and in a couple of days, as all our previous classes are archived there by Reb Zev Steen, who does that work, put it together. And again, we're here generally the last Wednesday of the month at noon. Next month, and actually the month after that too, we have in July, the last Wednesday of July, we have our summer kosher training program for rabbis all across the world. And so that's going to conflict. We'll have to send you the email. If you don't get the updates and you'd like to, they should send an email to... Where is that? Where should they send an email to sign up for when we have these classes?
Well, they can sign up to our alerts.
Sign up to alerts? Okay. If you go to Star K website and sign up for our alerts, you'll get the alert about this class as well. Okay. Rabbi Langer from Austin is
saying hello.
Okay.
Hello, Rabbi Langer.
Rabbi Langer is one of our dedicated representatives in Austin, Texas. So thank you for joining us. He's the rabbi of the...
I want to say hello to my wife and kid.
of the synagogue over there. And I just want to take a look at one more thing. We do have, again, some people from Australia, from Europe.
Haven't broken into Africa
All across North America. So thank you very much for joining us. Thank you, Rabbi Beyer. And have a very good day. Take care.
Bye-bye.